This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhuib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Africa clearly has the highest prevalence of modern-day slavery. The good news is that a number of countries have been upgraded in their ranking.
That's Maurice Middleburg, executive director of the group Free the Slaves, discussing the U.S. State Department's latest report on trafficking in persons. Details coming up.
Also, a petrol tanker overturned and crashed during rush hour on one of the major highways in Lagos, leaving at least 9 people dead. And cameras will be placed in strategic places around the campus of Uganda's Makerere University in an effort to curb sexual harassment.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, European Union leaders today wrap up their annual summit after having reached an agreement on migration. The issue has threatened to create splits in the EU as nations such as Greece and Italy, where most migrants land initially, demanded more help from the rest of Europe. But after nearly 10 hours of talks, the leaders reached a compromise. Journalist Catherine Field in Paris brings us some details of the agreement. She spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson and explains that a key element of the agreement is the establishment of what's called controlled centers for new arrivals.
Now, what these controlled centers will be are reception areas that will be run in some sort of collaboration with UNHCR and the IOM. And these centers will be set up, and this is where newly arrived migrants will go. And from there, then the migrants, if they get recognized as needing protection or asylum, they can then go on to a third country, or else they will be sent back home from there. The problem is, where will these controlled centers be? At the moment, it looks as though they will be in Malta and in Greece. Italy has said they're not very happy with the idea of having them. France has said, well, we're not a gateway country. We don't have boats coming into our shores, so there's no point putting it there. So that's been the biggest, if you like, success from the summit. The other point that's come up is the need to have stronger external borders of the European Union. And that means more money will go into a European Union Coast Guard that will be operating in the Mediterranean, and that will mean more ships, more boats, and more men on board these boats. The other aspect which they have had a lot of unity on, particularly this is something that Italy was pushing, is that to strengthen EU support for the Libyan Coast Guard. It's felt that the Libyan Coast Guard cannot match the might of the people smugglers, and so that by helping the Libyan Coast Guard, you're actually helping to stop the people traffickers. The problem with that, though, is that the NGOs are saying, well, we have documentation that these migrants in camps or holding centers, whatever they are in Libya, could be abused, that these camps are rife with abuse. The other issue which they're trying to find common ground on are these regional disembarkation platforms. These are platforms, as they're called, in African countries where instead of the migrants going to Libya and getting on boats, these migrants would be seen in Africa. The problem with that is Tunisia and Morocco have already said they are not prepared to host these so-called disembarkation platforms.
Now, I understand that the EU leaders also discussed increasing aid to Africa in particular to help discourage migration. What was the emphasis there?
The emphasis there is on what's known as the EU-Africa Trust Fund. Now, the EU has said they will put an additional 500 million euros into that fund that will help with education, social programs in some of these transit countries. The other problem is that they are having difficulties getting the pledges from some countries. that have been pledged, getting the money out of these countries to put into the Africa Trust Fund. So they've recognized that there is a problem there, but you know, as a way of putting more in, they've come up with this. The other issue which they are going to go back to these so-called transit or countries of origin, particularly in Africa and the Sahel region, is they're going to go back to them and say, you've got to do more to facilitate the return of migrants. Now, the EU recognizes that the return rate for migrants whose applications have been rejected is too low. It's around 36% of those who've had their applications rejected. That's the return rate. So they say it isn't really the problem of the host countries to return them. It's a problem of these other countries from where they've come from that are just not in a position to be able to take these migrants back.
That was Catherine Field in Paris speaking with our colleague Kate Pound Dawson.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and the rebel leader Riek Machar have ordered their forces to observe the permanent ceasefire as part of the framework agreement they signed in Khartoum on Wednesday. A South Sudan Army spokesperson says President Kiir and Defense Minister Kuol Manyang have instructed all SPLA commanders to cease fighting and only use their weapons in self-defense if they come under attack. The framework agreement calls on warring parties to disengage and separate forces that are near each other, withdraw allied troops, open humanitarian corridors, and release prisoners of war and political detainees. Machar today issued a statement declaring a ceasefire, which officially goes into effect at midnight on Saturday. VOA's Nabil Biagio in Juba reported that an SPLAIN opposition military spokesperson says the rebels will fully abide by the truce. Juba residents told Biagio they are hopeful about the ceasefire declaration, but some fear it might be broken, as others have.
The U.S. State Department's annual report on trafficking in people is a mixed bag for Africa, with a generally positive message that things can change for the better. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the progress in some parts of the continent came despite significant security threats, migration challenges, financial constraints, and other obstacles. Oris Middleburg, executive director of the group Free the Slaves, speaks with VOA's Paul Alexander about trafficking on the continent.
So it's a mixed portrait. On the one hand, Africa clearly has the highest prevalence of modern-day slavery. A little under 8 people per thousand are in some form of modern-day slavery. That makes up a little over 9 million people who are in that status. So it's the highest prevalence in the world, though in absolute numbers it's second to South Asia. On the other hand, the good news in the Trafficking in Persons report is that a number of countries have been upgraded in their ranking. I count at least 11 countries that received better rankings this year compared to last year. So it's a mark that progress is possible, but clearly it takes really concerted effort.
So what would you say right now is the brightest spot and the worst spot?
Okay, well, I would say that a really positive example of progress is to be found in Ghana, where, as it happens, We Free the Slaves have a program. And there it is in large part attributable, actually, to the Child Protection Compact that was signed between the government of the United States and the government of Ghana, which put resources and technical support to help the government of Ghana and communities in Ghana address the problem of modern-day slavery, particularly the issue of child slavery. And because of that effort, there's clearly been significant progress, though we're nowhere near where we want to be. And it's a good example of how collaboration between governments, collaboration with non-governmental organizations really can make a difference. On the other hand, we have places like Gabon that have clearly gone backwards. The same is unfortunately true for South Africa, where they have lapsed in their efforts and they are not making progress. If anything, they're going backwards.
So what are the biggest challenges to making more inroads, and what can be done to deal with these challenges?
So let's think about why the problem exists, and it really exists for two reasons. One has to do with the vulnerability of households, of families. Because of the poverty that is so endemic in Africa, but more importantly in poverty, is the lack of access to really essential services that make people highly vulnerable to being trafficked. Kids who are out of school, people who don't have access to basic health care, lack of access to legitimate sources of credit. So it's the deficit in these basic social and economic services that makes people really vulnerable to slavery. And the other piece of this is the weakness of government institutions, of judicial systems, of police, of law enforcement, of the justice sector. And so those have to be addressed together. And so what can be done is to provide support to strengthen the government institutions that are responsible for trying to arrest trafficking, to alleviate the vulnerability of households, and to work with multinational corporations to be sure that their supply chains are cleaned up where there are primary commodities involved, which is such a big part of the African economy, without cutting off trade, which would be a catastrophe.
What has been the impact of having so many migrants trying to reach Europe?
That's clearly been a major problem, is the use of labor recruiters who promise people jobs in Europe. These are fraudulent schemes, and then people end up being diverted into trafficking situations, as we saw horrifically in the case of Libya. And what really needs to be done there is to intercept these fraudulent labor recruiters and put a stop to this. Part of it is not only being lured into a trafficking situation, but what they also do is they charge exorbitant fees to the migrants so that workers end up in debt bondage. So even if they get to Europe and they have a job, they're de facto slaves because all their resources are going to the labor recruiters.
That was Maurice Middleburg, executive director of the group Free the Slaves, speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander.
A petrol tanker overturned and crashed during rush hour on one of the major highways in Lagos, setting more than 50 vehicles on fire and leaving at least 9 people dead. Reports say that as the tanker went out of control yesterday, on a downhill stretch of the Lagos-Ibadan Expressway, the driver was yelling that his brakes had failed. It was hauling about 33,000 liters of fuel that spilled and caught fire. ORK crews were still clearing out the burned-out shells of vehicles today. It was the latest crash involving such tankers, which often are poorly maintained and traveling on roads that have fallen into disrepair. That has sparked calls for improved road and vehicle safety in Nigeria, particularly Lagos, the largest city in Africa. While Nigeria is the continent's biggest oil producer, its imports, most of its gasoline because of refineries, are closed due to years of mismanagement.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. Coming up on 19 minutes past the hour, I'm Kim Lewis with Yahya Swuhib in Washington. Uganda's Makerere University is planning to install CCTV cameras in strategic places around the campus as part of an effort to curb sexual harassment. The idea is supported by a committee the university created to investigate reports of harassment. VOA's Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
For quite some time, Uganda's oldest public university, Makerere, has been in the media spotlight for cases of sexual harassment and assault. Several reports have been filed against lecturers. Several have been accused of luring girls to private meetings in often closed rooms to discuss their allegedly low marks. They offer the girls better grades in exchange for sex. But because of a lack of evidence, no lecturer has been punished. Sometimes the university finds that the physical relationship between the student and the teacher was consensual. This has frustrated students, especially the females, who sometimes prefer to keep silent about the problem. Lizelle Muwaya is a second-year journalism and communication student at Makerere University. She says there are several students who have not reported sexual harassment cases because they are poorly handled by the university authorities.
Sexual harassment has really tarnished the image of Makerere as a university, the image of other girls in this university, because people think we all go through it. But then again, also the lecturers that are doing this that have been reported, why are they not being acted upon? They are tarnishing the images of the other lecturers. I believe that we still have good lecturers in this university because I have seen them, much as we also have those predators, but it is up to the university authorities to make sure they are dealing with these cases, but they have decided to ignore them.
In the wake of the reports, the university management instituted a 5-member committee to investigate sexual harassment. After about 4 months of probing, the committee presented its findings this week. It determined that indeed there is a conducive environment on campus that makes it easier for men to approach, pressure and intimidate women. Associate Professor Christopher Mbazira is a member of the committee.
99% of the victims are female. So we discovered that there is also lack of empowerment on the part of students. They need to be empowered in terms of them understanding their worth as human beings, them understanding their dignity as part of the human race, and for them to be able to, you know, uphold that worth and not trade it for something that may affect their dignity.
The committee has recommended a number of reforms. They include installation of CCTV cameras in strategic places to monitor meetings between lecturers and students, and a review of university record-keeping systems to verify marks. The committee has given the University Council up to 31st May 2019 to ensure that cameras are installed on key buildings and within corridors, and that adequate lighting is provided throughout the campus. Professor Barnabas Nawangwe is the University Vice Chancellor.
CCTV cameras are good, and we have a program of installing them. It is an expensive venture, but it is something we intend to do. But I don't think that CCTV cameras by themselves will stop this vice. I think the most important thing is to have a zero tolerance policy and to enforce it. But we will still go ahead with our program of CCTV cameras.
The students have welcomed the move. Fiona Kokoi is a student's representative at the university. She is optimistic the cameras will help end impunity by filming any physical harassment by the lecturer against young women.
I happened to move into so many offices of the lecturers and I didn't see any cameras there. So probably if the university can make sure that we have cameras in each and every office of the lecturers, that will provide some evidence.
Florence Nakazi is also a student at the university. She wants the cameras to be placed in every room where students and lecturers discuss marks.
Let's say like every college has a marking center so that all the lecturers that mark the papers are there and they stay there. Like the camera should be in those centers so that when students come to complain, they are shown their marks from the marking centers.
Makerere University has anti-sexual harassment policy that prescribes tough punishments for the perpetrators. They include suspension, demotion, a written warning or public apology, or compensation to the aggrieved student. However, much as the policy has been in place for a long time, some argue that it has not been implemented and used to deter or apprehend the perpetrators of the vice. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
A leading State Department official is encouraging democratic reforms in Cameroon and investigations into alleged human rights abuses. Acting Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Donald Yamamoto and others testified this week on the crisis in Cameroon before the Global Human Rights and International Organizations Subcommittee of the U.S. House of Representatives. Cameroon is plagued by tensions. The Anglophone portion of the largely French-speaking country complains of neglect and repression. The government's crackdown in the region has led to the rise of a separatist movement. Security services are accused of arbitrary arrests, torture, the shooting of unarmed protesters, and other abuses against Anglophone civilians. Authorities have also been accused of human rights abuses in the fight against the Boko Haram terrorist group. In the midst of the turmoil, elections are scheduled for October, and longtime ruler Paul Biya is expected to run again. Yamamoto says the U.S. government is encouraging Cameroon's government to take action.
Our ambassador, Peter Barlin, is consistently and persistently raising these issues. We also raise the issues from Washington, not only with the Cameroonian government and mission officials here, but also raising this directly with President Biya and his government at all levels. Right now is that the response is not to the level that we expect and demand. And that's the issue, is that we need to be more consistent and persistent in addressing this. I'll give you one example. So right now we're able to get access to prisoners that are held in a Ministry of Justice. But what about the other prisoners held in, let's say, other types of detention centers? We need to have 100% access across the board, across the country.
Also testifying before Congress was Adoti Akwe of Amnesty International, who says 21,000 refugees have crossed into Nigeria and 238,000 are internally displaced.
The human rights situation in Cameroon is alarming and it is worsening. The government of President Biya has to date shown little inclination or political will to effectively address the crisis. It is time for the Friends of Cameroon and bodies like Congress to strengthen their calls and demand credible reforms with clear benchmarks. This is, of course, even more urgent with Cameroon scheduled to hold elections in October and with a Boko Haram insurgency in the far north and violence in major parts of the country. It is hard and dangerous to see how elections were going to be proceeding that are going to be free and fair.
Yamamoto says the U.S. is providing more than $100 million for food aid, economic recovery, health care, and military training and support. The State Department says it's monitoring that support to be sure it is not to be used to commit human rights abuses. Hans de Marie Hengroep, a senior analyst for Central Africa at the International Crisis Group, also testified. He says there should be an independent international investigation of all human rights abuses and a guarantee by Cameroon to punish those responsible.
And failure to do so, then the U.S. can push, or the U.S. Congress can push the Trump administration for re-examining the military cooperation, the development aid, and also sanctions against these specific individuals who are directly involved in these abuses.
Hengroep says, in the long term, Cameroon should consider greater regional governance rather than a strong central government. In the short term, transparent elections in October are important, and for that, Hengroep says, suggested an immediate ceasefire. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is our moment. We are speaking out to end malaria.
This is DJ Drogba. Malaria is preventable and treatable.
Sleep under an insecticide-treated mosquito net every night. Go to a health center at the first sign of fever for testing and appropriate treatment.
Join me. United, we can beat malaria.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.